take into consideration are, when you review it again, is that the way it reads, it violates the United Constitution and gives more power to the business committee over the Constitution. Number one is the petitions that are received. If it states that when a date is set, if there's not enough petitions, that meeting would be canceled because it would be fiscally irresponsible. But it doesn't state what happens to these petitions. It doesn't state if they're forwarded, if they're put on hold, or for how long. The language is too vague. And it's just too vague. The second part that violates the Constitution and gives more power to the business committee, and I'm very disturbed by this, is within the Constitution, the chair's ability to call a meeting. It's stating that the business committee would determine that you're going to be the one that reviews it. That's undermining the Constitution, and it's given. If this law passes, then you're basically saying that we're over what the Constitution allows, and it can't be done that way because it has to be a constitutional amendment. But within this law, it states that this law is going to supersede that. And I don't even know why it's in there. That would be a good explanation when you bring it back to explain the purpose of that. What I challenge in that is the sitting chair or any future chair, when you're all gone, over and done, there's going to be another committee in place. It could be an emergency where the chair calls a meeting for whatever purpose, and it shouldn't be the BC that determines if it goes, if and when. But that's how this law is stated. That's a slippery slope. So not only that, in the early, in our mid-90s, LOC attorney themselves wrote that a law should not have a standard operating procedure within it because it becomes too muddled. And for the reader's sake, it should be clarified. It should be more streamlined. And for clarity's sake, you need to separate the two. You don't need a meeting law versus a process and procedure for either one. I suggest strongly that you do separate the two out, because the petition process is separate from how you conduct a meeting. That's phase two. They're intertwined and intermingled too much within it, and you just lose focus. Those are my main suggestions. And also, I agree with David, that was a main concern of mine too, was that the business committee would take care of any unfinished business. That was past precedent practice. When we lost a quorum, we don't lose quorums anymore. And I don't think we will for a long time. This meeting law is an example. If it, like it was before when it was brought on last July, this is a whole year later, it was unfinished business and it wasn't brought back. What if the business committee took it upon themselves to say, we're passing this? You violated the Constitution twice. You infringed on the petition process itself by not having it clear what happens to them if you cancel a meeting. And you infringe upon a chair's ability to call a meeting by saying that the rest of you, eight of you, will determine when and if. No, the Constitution says the chair can call that meeting. And the Constitution has to be amended in order to do so, not a law that overrides it. So those are very main and very, I'm so amazed that it's even in there and that it took over 4 to 5 years to even write it. You had four drafts. Within the four drafts, why didn't one of you say, hey, we're violating the Constitution? It didn't occur. So that's my comments.
All right, thank you for your suggestions. Madeline?
Your comment that you can go forward with a change in the Constitution is premature. It was denied by the Midwest regional BIA office, the same office that screwed us up with Hobart. And it is going to go on to the IBIA court if possible. So you are premature.